Numbers deported, whence and whither? Many European Jews were deported east, and we should now take a closer look at this program of deportations. There are several obvious questions: who was deported, how many, to where, what was life like where they were sent, and what happened to them? To some extent, only partial or provisional answers are possible here. First, we should consider the numbers and origins of the Jews involved in this resettlement program. Here we run into the problems discussed in Chapter 1. Counting Jews can be difficult. However, it is not statistical accuracy we seek here but order of magnitude or approximate figures that can be used to show that, on the basis of verifiable data, the Jews who were deported could easily have survived after all. It will thus be satisfactory to merely accept certain figures offered by Reitlinger and by Hilberg for the purposes of discussion, although one can pick quarrels with them, as one can with Rassinier's study. The figures are estimates of numbers killed. It is understood that here we assume that these people had merely been resettled in the East. In the case of Reitlinger, we employ his higher estimate. Table 8, Numbers of Resettled Jews. Germany, Reitlinger, 180,000, Hilberg, 160,000. Austria, Reitlinger, 60,000, Hilberg, 53,000. Czechoslovakia, Reitlinger, 251,000, Hilberg, 271,000. Denmark, Hilberg, 1,000. France, Reitlinger, 65,000, Hilberg, 70,000. Belgium, Reitlinger, 28,000, Hilberg, 50,000. Luxembourg, Reitlinger, 3,000, Hilberg, 2,000. Norway, Reitlinger, 700, Hilberg, 1,000. Holland, Reitlinger, 102,700, Hilberg, 120,000. Italy, Reitlinger, 8,000, Hilberg, 17,000. Yugoslavia, Reitlinger, 58,000, Hilberg, 63,000. Greece, Reitlinger, 60,000, Hilberg, 62,000. Totals, Reitlinger, 816,400, Hilberg, 870,000. To some extent, these figures are based on German documents, notably the Korher Report, documents NO 5193-8. To some extent, neutral sources are involved, such as the Dutch Red Cross with the Holland figures. There is also a certain amount of demographic speculation involved. However, I believe that at least the totals given are of the correct order. We do not admit Hungary into the list, because those said by both Reitlinger and Hilberg to have been exterminated are pure invention. They were not even deported east. Somewhat fewer than 100,000 were sent to Germany for labor toward the end of the war. Quite a few of these must have perished in the chaotic conditions of the last months, but the number is essentially impossible to arrive at. Romania is also supposed to have lost 200,000 to 370,000 Jews via extermination, but as Reitlinger remarks, such figures are quote-unquote conjectural on account of, quote, the lack of reliable information, unquote. Conceded to be in the same category are the largest groups of allegedly exterminated Jews, 2,350,000 to 3,300,000 from Poland and 400,000 to 700,000 from the USSR. These figures are pure demographic speculation, with absolutely no supporting data, other than the declarations of post-war communist governments. These figures will be considered further below. At this point, we merely recall that the Jews deported from France and Belgium were not French or Belgian Jews, pages 114, 119, but that those deported from Holland were almost all Dutch Jews, page 119. The reason for this appears to have been a mere legal technicality. France and Belgium had formally surrendered to the Germans, and formal armistice terms were agreed to. In Holland, the Queen had merely fled to England, and thus the Germans viewed Holland as being without an independent state. German rights in Holland were correspondingly more extensive. Of course, the Germans intended to eventually expel all Jews from Europe, but they naturally started with the ones for which the minimum of legal difficulties existed. The excerpt of the Red Cross report, which we examined in Chapter 5, is certainly in conflict with the extermination claims in the case of the Romanian Jews. It is reasonable to assume that the bulk of the Jews in Soviet-controlled territory that was occupied by the Germans after June 22, 1941, escaped into the interior before the arrival of the latter, a belief that is also held by Reitlinger, page 241. In any case, there is no evidence that the Germans did more than adopt the sort of guarded and hostile attitude toward the Jews who remained, which was implied by the partisan menaces discussed in the preceding chapter. The Polish Jews constituted the majority of the Jews moved around by the Germans, and present, on account of their location and circumstances, the greatest difficulties to any detailed analysis of the matter. We can only reconstruct in general outline what happened to them. We first remark that, while it is convenient here to distinguish between Russian and Polish Jews, the real distinction is most slight, if it could be said to exist at all. Before World War I, both sets of Jews were subjects of the Russian Empire. The first relevant events involving Polish Jews were due to Russian, rather than German measures. Germany and Russia partitioned Poland in 1939, the eastern half, and thus a large portion of the Polish Jews, thereby coming under Soviet rule. These Jews were the objects of a Russian resettlement program, whose broad features have been described by Korzen in an article published by the Israeli government. Korzen's article is of some importance to the matters treated in this chapter. Briefly, what happened is that hundreds of thousands of these Jews were dispersed throughout the Soviet Union in an evacuation program which commenced in June 1940. At first, many were sent to labor camps, but after September 1941, a serious effort was made, quote, to convert the refugees into Soviet citizens and prevent their leaving the Soviet Union, unquote. The dispersion was as far as Central Asia and even to the Far East. Details are difficult to develop, and Korzen pleads for more interest in research into the matter. Many became Soviet citizens, some trekked back to Poland after the war, and in many cases proceeded on to Israel. Korzen remarks that the Jews who remained in Poland as leaders of the new communist regime were put under pressure, quote, to change their names to purely Polish-sounding ones, as well as to keep their Jewish origin secret, unquote. Some eventually arrived at places such as Persia and India via Shanghai. The Joint Distribution Committee of New York maintained contact with the refugees in the Soviet Union during the war, and assisted their movements after the war. It is also known that a large number of Jews, given by one source as 300,000, fled from western to eastern Poland in 1939 when the Nazis invaded the former. Thus, a significant fraction, perhaps as many as a third, of the Polish Jews had been moved beyond reach of the Germans, before the outbreak of war between Russia and Germany in June 1941. Although there had been a limited German resettlement program earlier, notably for Vienna Jews, the Nazi resettlement program began with earnestness in the autumn of 1941. If Polish Jews are excluded but Romanian Jews included in our immediate considerations, we see that the Germans moved at most 1 million Jews to settlements or ghettos in the occupied East. From the locations that have been mentioned, we can get a fairly good idea of where these settlements were located: Riga, Minsk, Ukraine, Sea of Azov, north of the Black Sea, forms a connected and plausible line on a map. While we have a good idea of where these settlements were, we know little else about them other than that they existed. As one should naturally expect, the Allied occupation destroyed the relevant German records and documents, so that only scraps survive that deal with the resettlement program in terms more specific than, say, the Luther Memorandum, NG 2586J reproduced above. Indeed, Stengrock's defense made a serious effort to produce such documents at Nuremberg, but the best it could do relative to the eastern camps was to submit two documents into evidence. The first, Stengrock 64, is a letter from Eichmann, dated June 5, 1943, to the Foreign Office for the attention of Todden. It concerns the Jewish camps in the East, and some articles that had appeared in various European magazines concerning them. It appears that quote-unquote fantastic rumors in Slovakia concerning these camps were being given credence by some people there, and in addition to citing the magazine articles, Eichmann remarked, quote, to counteract the fantastic rumors circulating in Slovakia about the fate of the evacuated Jews, attention should be drawn to the postal communications of these Jews with Slovakia, which for instance amounted to more than 1,000 letters and postcards for February/March this year. Concerning the information apparently desired by Prime Minister Dr. Tuka about the conditions in Jewish camps, no objections would be raised by this office against any possible scrutinizing of the correspondence, before it is forwarded to the addressees, unquote. The second Stengrock document, Stengrock 65, also going under the number NO1624, is somewhat more effective in giving a picture of the situation of the Jews in the occupied East. It is an order, dated August 20, 1943, by the chief of the RU SHA, Race and Settlement Main Office, SS General Hildebrandt, relative to associations between Germans and Jews in the occupied East, and to the permissible ways in which the latter could be employed. It reads, quote, it has been pointed out to me by various sources that the behavior of German offices in the occupied Eastern territories toward Jews had developed in such a way in the past months as to give rise to misgivings. In particular, Jews are being employed in jobs and services, which, in consideration of maintaining secrecy, should only be assigned to absolutely reliable persons, who should appear to be the confidential representatives of the German offices in the eyes of the indigenous population. Unfortunately, in addition to this, there is allegedly personal association of Reich Germans with Jewesses, which exceeds the limits that must be strictly observed for ideological and racial reasons. It is said to concern native Jews as well as Jews and Jewesses who have been deported from the Old Reich to the occupied Eastern territories. This state of affairs has already led to the fact that Jews are exploiting their apparently confidential positions, in exchange for the supply of preferential rations by the indigenous population. It is said that recently, when apprehensions were expressed in the East about a German retreat, indigenous persons endeavored to ingratiate themselves particularly with those Jews employed in German offices, in order to ensure better treatment at the hands of the Bolshevists. The decent section of the indigenous population viewed these events with great disapproval, because it saw in them the contradiction between National Socialist principles and the actual attitude of the Germans. Owing to improper labor assignment of Jews, the esteem of the Greater German Reich and the position of its representatives are being harmed, and the necessity for effective police security of the occupied Eastern territories prejudiced. Grave dangers could arise particularly from the fact that the Jews are utilizing the jobs assigned to them for espionage and propaganda in the service of our enemies. I therefore request that the subordinate offices in the occupied Eastern territories be given the following instructions. 1. Jews and persons of a similar status may only be employed in manual labor. It is prohibited to employ them in office work, such as bookkeeping, typewriting, card indexing, registration. Strict attention must be paid to the fact that they will not be given work, which would permit them to draw conclusions on matters that are to be kept secret. 2. It is forbidden to employ Jews for general or personal service, for the discharging of orders, for the negotiation of business deals, or for the procuring of goods. 3. Private association with Jews, Jewesses, and persons of a similar status is prohibited, as well as any relations beyond those officially necessary." Unquote. The persons of a similar status referred to were probably mainly gypsies. We assume that Stengrock's council made a thorough search of the documents which had been allowed to survive at Nuremberg. Hildebrandt's order to the Ruhr SHA merely repeated, verbatim, a Kaltenbrunner order of August 13, 1943, to all German offices in the occupied eastern areas, document NO 1247. The failure of Stengrock to use NO 1247 was probably due to its being nearly identical to NO 1624. Such documents are only a pathetic scrap from what must have been extensive written records dealing with the Jewish settlements in the East. The first was probably allowed to survive because it speaks of fantastic rumors in circulation in Slovakia. The other two probably just slipped through because their implications were not sufficiently obvious. In Bohm's book, We Survived, Jeanette Wolf, a German Jewess who was a leader of the German Social Democratic Party, has contributed an article on her experiences after being deported to Riga in Latvia. Her tale of gratuitous beatings by the SS, sex orgies, and drunkenness is not believable. Her article is worth something, however, because it shows that there was a large system of settlements, ghettos, and camps for Jews in the vicinity of Riga. These settlements quartered not only Latvian Jews, but also large numbers of Jews deported from Germany and other European countries. Of course, in Chapter 4, page 153, we noted the Theresienstadt source, who reported that the Nazis were deporting Jews to Riga and other places throughout the course of the war. Nazi documents dealing with the Riga settlement have not survived.